House Committee on the Judiciary, Subcommittee on Criminal Law, Thursday, March 1st, 2001, 8:30 a.m., Hearing Room 357.
Criminal Law Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee, appreciate everyone being here and being relatively prompt this morning. We have a full agenda, so we're going to need to move as quickly as possible. It would be the chair's intention to allow a couple of members of the legislature who are here and wish to testify on a number of bills at once to do so. So with that, I'm going to open consecutively the public hearings on House Bill 2062, 2063, 2064, 2065, and 2072. We will not be hearing today House Bill 2277. That has been currently pulled from the schedule for the day. With that, I'd invite Representative Bill Witt to come forward at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for scheduling this public hearing on these bills today. I, was, of course, was a member of the Judiciary Committee last session, so I miss all the work that you all get to do here. But I'm sure you're carrying on capably without me.
We try. It's an effort.
During the interim, I had a number of discussions with constituents and with other folks here in Oregon who expressed a great concern over the effectiveness of our family law statutes as it applies to issues of child custody. Too often it appeared that parents use children as a weapon to get back at one another, and too often custodial parents seemed to feel that they could use the children to leverage additional benefits out of non-custodial parents. And it seemed to me that the focus of our law really should be based upon what's in the best interest of the child or the children in a given situation, and to that extent there should be efforts or incentives built into the law to keep custodial and non-custodial parents working together cooperatively to try to do what is in the best interest of the children. It also seemed to me that fairness to both custodial and non-custodial parents was important. In the overwhelming number of cases, both mothers and fathers love their children and want to be involved in their lives and give direction to their children. Too often it seemed that our laws didn't allow for that, or too easily our laws were played with in such a way that it didn't allow for that. So it's my hope that these bills will allow for a thoughtful discussion in an effort to revise and improve our law as it relates to child custody here in Oregon. And then very briefly, Mr. Chairman, as you indicated, there's a series of bills here. House Bill 2062 speaks specifically to the issue of joint custody and creates in Oregon law a presumption of joint custody. And my understanding is more and more states have been moving to that presumption, and I think there'll be testimony on that today. House Bill 2063 revises child support laws relative to children over 18. It appears today that that children over 18 are treated differently in support decrees than they are where the parents are living together. House Bill 2064 puts into law parenting time provisions, which today seem to be applied in grossly different ways by courts around the state of Oregon. And House Bill 2065 speaks to the narrow issue of a requirement to purchase life insurance for non-custodial parents. And finally, House Bill 2072, which is a little bit different, speaks to an issue that we talked about last session, Mr. Chairman, and we got partly resolved, but I don't think we have fully resolved. Basically, it says if you have a disabled non-custodial parent who has a child support obligation, that Social Security or veterans benefits that are paid to the custodial parent on behalf of the child should be offset dollar for dollar from the support obligation of the non-custodial parent. And I think as you look at that law, Mr. Chairman, I hope the committee keeps in mind that we're talking about people that are suffering disabilities, who are struggling to support themselves, who get benefits because of their disability for their child, that go to the custodial parent on behalf of the child. And currently, Oregon law does not give a full value benefit or offset for those dollars. So again, Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate your holding this hearing and the thoughtful consideration of the committee to these various issues. I think this is an area of our law that is certainly complex, but needs a thoughtful review, and hopefully through this proceeding, we'll be able to improve these laws and improve life for families throughout the state of Oregon. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Good. Thank you, Representative Witt, for being here. Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Witt, can you tell me on House Bill 2062, it is eliminating the requirement of mediation. And can you tell me why you're eliminating the requirement of mediation in that particular bill?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can't at this point in time, but I'm sure as people testify about the bill, they'll be able to specifically address that.
If I may follow up,
Mr.
Chair. Representative Witt, if in fact there is a proposal to require that mediation stay in, would that be something that you would support in this bill?
I'd have to look at it in context, Representative. I'm just not prepared right now at this point in time to comment on that, but that's something I'll certainly listen to, and you and I can certainly talk about.
Thank you.
Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Representative Witt, I note in 2062, the language, quote, when appropriate, the court shall recognize the value of close contact with both parents and encourage joint parental custody and joint responsibility for the welfare of the children is taken out of current legislation, and you're substituting a statutory presumption that joint interest is in the best interest of the child. I'm wondering the value of that trade-off. It seems to me that, and I'd like you to speak to that, because it appears that you're taking away from the court to recognize the value of close contact with the children and advocating perhaps joint parental custody in terms for a mere statutory presumption, which can be easily rebutted. What's the value of the trade-off here in the best interest of the children?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, I think what this bill was saying is that the presumption as you go into a custody case, the presumption is that joint custody is in the best interest of the child. Obviously, still allows testimony as to why it's not in the best interest of the child. And I think the standard that is removed here, which is the language you're referring to, needs to be removed so that the presumption takes precedence as the beginning standard that the court would look at in determining the determination of custody.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Witt. I think we have two other representatives that are here that would also like to speak to this bill. Representative Lee, is she still in the room? Representative Lee, and also Representative Al King, if you two would come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have somebody with you, Representative Lee?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. If you gentlemen have a seat, and then we'll bring Representative King up after. Please proceed.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill. With me are Steve Migrant and Heath Lawson, who are from the Willamette Law School, who have been interns for me this session, and I've asked them to research this issue. I certainly support equal access to custody by both fathers and mothers, but I think this bill does not do the job. We are not supportive of the presumption as written. And I'd like to have an opportunity for these two gentlemen to go over their testimony either before or after Representative King so that they could speak to this issue. And in particular, I'd like you to look at the last page of the testimony, which deals with the effects if this were to be passed. So, Mr. Chair, if you'd prefer to have Mr. or Representative King come up first and then have them testify, that would be fine.
I appreciate that, Representative Lee. That would be preferential because I know Representative King. Okay. We're happy to accommodate you, Representative King. We want you to get back to whatever other business you're supposed to be attending to today. All right. Good.
This is it.
Then please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative and Committee. House Bill 2062, as you know, my name is Steve Migrant, and House Bill 2062, as you know, creates a rebuttable presumption in favor of joint custody. At first, this can be an attractive alternative, as it allows both parents to play a more active role in the child's life. However, the issue is not whether joint custody is in the best interest of children. Currently, Oregon law provides joint custody for those parents who are able to cooperate and get along. They can agree to joint custody, and it's currently a pretty good system. The issue with this bill is best depicted on the chart, as you can, if you look at the back page. Parents who are agreeable, if you look at the blue circle, parents who are agreeable to joint custody, currently the courts will typically award joint custody to those parents. However, parents who are not agreeable to joint custody, the courts will not award joint custody. House Bill 2062 is a one-size-fits-all approach that presumes joint custody is in the best interest of all children. The purpose of this diagram is to show that Oregon already has a viable option for those families able to agree to joint custody. And the real problem with this bill is that it presumes joint custody is in the best interest of children even when their parents have substantial conflict between them. The experts, we've done a lot of research, and the experts are able to agree on one issue, that high conflict families, the detriments of the high conflict among the children definitely outweigh any benefits to joint custody and both parents playing a role in a child's life. In conclusion, well, first of all, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Mr. Heath Lawson, and he would like to talk to you a little bit about a possible suggestion that we have regarding joint legal and joint physical custody.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Heath Lawson. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak to you. When lawmakers and judges and researchers and just about anybody dealing with the issue of joint custody refer to the term joint custody, a major problem with that is that there isn't one standard definition. People tend to refer to joint custody as meaning divided custody, split custody, shared parenting, and this causes a problem because people don't really know what other people are talking about. In the state of Oregon, under ORS 107.169, joint custody means an arrangement by which parents share rights, responsibilities for major decisions concerning the child, including but not limited to the child's residence, education, health care, and religious training. Now, if you, under my research, I found that there's a distinction between joint legal custody and joint physical custody. And if you look on under Section 3, there is two definitions from the California Family Code, and California has distinguished between those two terms. And joint legal custody, in essence, is the shared decision-making by both parents, and joint physical custody is shared actual custody. You know, they spend equal time with the parents. Now, if you compare those two definitions to Oregon's definition of joint custody, which doesn't distinguish between the two, it looks more like joint legal custody. Now, we don't really have a problem with the fact that Oregon's definition is joint legal custody, but there is a term in there that, in Oregon's definition, that refers to decisions concerning the child's residence. Now, that creates ambiguity. You know, the problem with ambiguity is it tends to lead to disparate results in determinations made by the judge. And we think that if the distinction was made in the law, in the Oregon statutes, that it would provide more clarity, more notice to the public, and would better serve the people. I think that concludes my comments on any possible modifications to this bill if it is passed. Thank you.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could either of you gentlemen tell me if you've done research and know how many states currently have this presumption on their books?
Do you want?
Yes, we have done research, and I can't remember the exact number, but there are a large number of states that have different types of presumptions. Some are presumptions in favor of joint custody if the parents agree. Some of them are, that's like California. California has that presumption if the parents agree. Other states, I believe Maryland has just a blanket presumption that joint custody is in the best interest of the child. Other states have different modifications of that, and the ABA has put out a chart in one of their publications called, I believe it's the Fact Book on Children or something like that, and it has a chart in there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, we will be glad to provide that chart to the committee.
Thank you. That'd be very helpful.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative King.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Al King, House District 44. I've asked Mr. Hoyman to join me as he's given substantial assistance on a constituent concern that has led me to look into his circumstance pretty extremely, and I come before you in support of the Dash 3 amendments. The circumstance that I'm addressing with my constituent is that she has a son who has had a mental illness for a prolonged period of time. He owes child support. He's on SSI, and in addition to the support for the child that's being paid by SSI, the state is also collecting the money from him to pay the same support. So he's in effect paying the support twice. His monthly income is $894.
Representative King, I want to make sure that we have now moved on to a conversation of House Bill 2072. Right.
Correct.
House Bill 2072. Okay.
That's correct. So these are the Dash 3 amendments for 2072.
Right.
It looks like they're distributing them now. And so I'm addressing the portion of the bill that has to do with support payments.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask, will the Dash 3 amendments replace the Dash 2, or is it an addition to the Dash 2 amendments?
My understanding is that the answer is yes, that there was a modest correction to the 2s, and so they became the 3s.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please proceed.
Okay. So my constituent has a son who is on mental disability for a prolonged period, and that his disability income from SSI is $894 a month. That he has owed child support, which was appropriate, and that SSI has been paying the child support, but in addition to collecting the SSI child support, they're deducting from his payment to him a like amount, so he is paying twice, and that this is a circumstance that is not unusual. It happens often, and I feel that the fair thing is that whatever the judge says, it is owed for support for that child needs to be paid, and I think everybody here will fight for that. But also, I think that it's inappropriate for that money to be taken twice, from someone that's living on a disability income. We know that by definition, they're very poor as well. So if a person has $894 disability income, the child support is $200, and the SSI is paying the $200 in child support, I think it's inappropriate to then also take the $200 from the individual and take their income down to $694. This then puts that person in a situation where they can't survive, number one. Number two, they probably automatically become a deadbeat dad, fall into those figures. They would have no credit, and it would also make them very difficult to become reemployable for those that that can go over that bar. This is not an area where I put a lot of time in on this circumstance and have looked forward to this bill coming forward so we can address this concern. I've asked Mr. Hoyman to come forward because his expertise in this is more than mine, and he can help with the details, and he has some testimony I'd like to share.
Thank you, Mr. King, or Representative King. Representative Law, I believe, had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good representative. I'm not necessarily opposed to a dollar-for-dollar credit under these circumstances. As you're probably aware, I worked with both the good representative Witt and the Department of Justice to come to a good calculation on how that might be accomplished in a fair manner to all the parties. However, I did want to ask a question of, because you did make a statement that I think is somewhat confusing when you consider how child support is actually calculated. And by virtue of the fact of the loss of non-sexual consortium on the part of the child of a disabled person, the government sends the child's custodial parent a different payment that accrues to the child because of the child's losses of companionship and so forth. Isn't that really the source of those payments?
That's certainly one interpretation. I think that's an interpretation used by the state also. I should point out that the people with human services have been just very excellent in terms of responding to my inquiries and helping. The Social Security benefits are something that's earned by someone having worked for it. And I think that that was earned by the individual that received SSI. And that veteran benefit then is being provided before. So I do think that charging twice is unfair, and also drives someone further into poverty and is contrary to other issues.
Oh, but just to clarify, that it does not actually come out of the wallet of the disabled person twice.
I think that we can probably agree that that I am saying that the amount that is paid to the child should account for the credit to the
I happen to agree, but it is really not the disabled person's payment twice. I'm trying to make the record clear.
Let me ask the senator upon you just one moment, but that is what's happening with the child's benefit. So what the state also then wants to do is reduce money from the person's disability check and pay that money also, so that would be the second payment.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dennis Coyne. I believe the question you were asking, Mr. Chair, was how does payments are derived and how are they made the payments twice. I think to clarify the issue, there's a misunderstanding in how these benefits are being paid in the first place. If during a man's lifetime, he works so many hours, and you apply for Social Security disability benefits, they apply that according to the hours that you have already put in. So you've accumulated it, and it's a benefit awarded to you. And when you become 100% disabled, let's say they calculated my support to be $1,000. That's what my entire life is, but I'm entitled to $1,000 a month because of my disability. If these persons have children, they take one half of whatever my disability benefit is, which is $500. And that goes to the benefit of the children, part of the Social Security benefit. And it does not affect my $1,000 payment. In the case of a divorce, hearing here,
the benefit that is awarded to the children goes to the custodial parent. The custodial parent does not report this as income, does not report this as income tax in the state of Oregon, does not recognize it as child support. So in addition to child support that we're normally awarded in the state of Oregon, we are getting zero credit for the payments that are made on our behalf to these children. We are awarded a secondary child support order, according to the guidelines, because we are actually carried to our child support payments being made. And most of these people that went into the divorce, their attorney told them at the very beginning that you won't have to pay child support because it's already being paid by Social Security. Well, it turns out the state of Oregon doesn't recognize that, so it's untrue. And most of these people wouldn't be aware of this because they're pretty full of nothing. So they really secure. And that they what things that they really get was on a credit report, and now all these people have bad credit on the advice of their attorney. And that's where the double support came in. But it also raises the person's credit because we are not getting any credit for the child support that's being paid on our behalf to the custodian of credit. Representative Atkins, yes, just a couple of questions both for Representative King and for the constituent. I'm a little concerned about the Dash 3 amendment that states essentially that the income of the obligor for purposes of the child support calculation will not be adjusted upward due to the non-taxable nature of the Social Security Board